United States Declaration of Independence, from Wikipedia, the Free Encyclopedia, at en.wikipedia.org. Part 1. The Declaration of Independence is the document in which the 13 colonies in North America declared themselves independent of the Kingdom of Great Britain and explained their justifications for doing so. It was ratified by the Second Continental Congress on 4 July 1776 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. This anniversary is celebrated as Independence Day in the United States. A later copy was engrossed and signed by the delegates. It is on display in the National Archives in Washington, D.C. It is considered to be one of America's most important founding documents. Section 1. History. Section 1.1. Background. Throughout the 1760s and 1770s, relations between Great Britain and 13 of her North American colonies became increasingly strained. Fighting broke out in 1775 at Lexington and Concord, marking the beginnings of the American Revolutionary War. Although there was little initial sentiment for outright independence, the view of the British as oppressors widened after the passage of the Intolerable Acts, which struck strongly against colonial self-rule. The rising tide against British rule was exemplified and strengthened by works such as the Suffolk Resolves in Massachusetts during 1774 and Thomas Paine's pamphlet Common Sense, released in January 1776. Section 1.2. Draft and Adoption. In June of 1776, a committee of the Continental Congress, consisting of John Adams of Massachusetts, Benjamin Franklin of Pennsylvania, Thomas Jefferson of Virginia, Robert R. Livingston of New York, and Roger Sherman of Connecticut, the Committee of Five, was formed to draft a suitable declaration to frame this resolution. The committee decided that Jefferson would write the draft, which he showed to Franklin and Adams. Franklin himself made at least 48 corrections. Jefferson then produced another copy incorporating these changes, and the committee presented this copy to the Continental Congress on 28 June 1776. Independence was declared on 2 July 1776, pursuant to the Lee Resolution presented by Richard Henry Lee of Virginia on 7 June 1776, which read, in part, "Resolved, that these United Colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is, and ought to be, totally dissolved." The full declaration was rewritten somewhat in the general session of the Continental Congress. Congress, meeting in Independence Hall in Philadelphia, finished revising Jefferson's draft statement on July 4, approved it, and sent it to a printer. Section 2. Distribution and Copies. After its adoption by Congress on 4 July, a handwritten draft signed by the President of Congress John Hancock and the Secretary Charles Thompson was then sent a few blocks away to the printing shop of John Dunlap. Through the night, between 150 and 200 copies were made, now known as Dunlap broadsides. One was sent to George Washington on July 6, who had read it to his troops in New York on July 9. A copy reached London on August 10. The 25 Dunlap broadsides still known to exist are the oldest surviving copies of the document. The original handwritten copy has not survived. On July 19, Congress ordered a copy be engrossed, handwritten in fair script on parchment by an expert penman, for the delegates to sign. This engrossed copy was produced by Timothy Medlock, assistant to the Secretary of Congress. Most of the delegates signed it on August 2, 1776, in geographic order of their colonies from north to south, though some delegates were not present and had to sign later. Two delegates never signed at all. As new delegates joined the Congress, they were also allowed to sign. A total of 56 delegates eventually signed. This engrossed copy is now on display at the National Archives. On January 18, 1777, the Continental Congress ordered the declaration be more widely distributed. The second printing was made by Mary Catherine Goddard. The first printing had only included the names John Hancock and Charles Thomson. Goddard's printing was the first to list all signatories. In 1823, printer William J. Stone was commissioned by the Secretary of State John Quincy Adams to create an engraving of the documents essentially identical to the original. Stone's copy was made using a wet ink transfer process where the surface of the document was moistened and some of the original ink transferred to the surface of a copper plate which was then etched so that the copies could be run off the plate on the press. Because of poor conservation of the 1776 document through the 19th century, Stone's engraving, rather than the original, has become the basis of most modern reproductions. The first German translation of the Declaration was published July 6-8, 1776, as a broadside in unfolded form by the printing press of Stainer & Sist of Philadelphia. Gustafson, 2004, traces the paths taken by the original manuscript copies of the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights prior to being placed permanently in the National Archives. From 1776 to 1921, the Declaration moved from one city to another and to different public buildings, until placed in the Department of State Library. The Constitution was never exhibited, and the Bill of Rights provenance up to 1938 were largely unknown. From 1921 to 1952, the Declaration and the Constitution were in the Library of Congress, and the National Archives held the Bill of Rights. In 1952, the Librarian of Congress and the U.S. Archivist agreed on moving the Declaration and the Constitution to the National Archives. Since 1953, the three documents have been called the Charters of Freedom. Encased in 1951, by the 1980s, deterioration threatened the documents. In 2001, using the latest in preservation technology, conservators treated the documents and re-encased them in encasements made of titanium and aluminium. They were put on display again with the opening of the remodeled National Archives Rotunda in 2003. Section 3. Signers of the Declaration. The first and most famous signature of the engrossed copy was that of John Hancock, President of the Continental Congress. Two future presidents, Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, were among the signatories. Edward Rutledge, aged 26, was the younger signer, and Benjamin Franklin, aged 70, was the oldest signer. The 56 signers of the Declaration represented the new states as follows, from north to south: New Hampshire, Josiah Bartlett, William Whipple, Matthew Thornton, Massachusetts, Samuel Adams, John Adams, John Hancock, Robert Treat Paine, Elbridge Gerry, Rhode Island, Stephen Hopkins, William Ellery, Connecticut, Roger Sherman, Samuel Huntington, William Williams, Oliver Wolcott, New York, William Floyd, Philip Livingston, Francis Lewis, Lewis Morris, New Jersey, Richard Stockton, John Witherspoon, Francis Hopkinson, John Hart, Abraham Clark, Pennsylvania, Robert Morris, Benjamin Rush, Benjamin Franklin, John Morton, George Clymer, James Smith, George Taylor, James Wilson, George Ross, Delaware, George Reed, Caesar Rodney, Thomas McKean, Mary Lann, Samuel Chase, William Parker, Thomas Stone, Charles Carroll of Carrollton, Virginia, George Wythe, Richard Henry Lee, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Harrison, Thomas Nelson Jr., Francis Lightfoot Lee, Carter Braxton, North Carolina, William Hooper, Joseph Hughes, John Penn, South Carolina, Edward Rutledge, Thomas Hayward Jr., Thomas Lynch Jr., Arthur Middleton, and Georgia, Barton Gwinnett, Lyman Hall, George Walton. Section 4. Annotated Text of the Declaration. The text of the Declaration of Independence can be divided into 5 sections. The Introduction, the Preamble, the Indictment of George III, the Denunciation of the British People, and the Conclusion. Note that these 5 headings are not part of the text of the document. Section 4.1. Introduction. In Congress, July 4, 1776, the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America, when, in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume, among the powers of the earth, the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. Section 4.2. Preamble. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles, and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to effect their safety and happiness. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer, all evils are sufferable, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government, and to provide new guards for their future security. Section 4.3. Indictment. Such has been the patience sufferance so these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let the facts be submitted to a candid world. He has refused to assent to laws, the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance, unless suspended in their operation, till his assent should be obtained, and when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them. He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people, unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them and formidable to tyrants only. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records, for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing with manly firmness his invasions on the rights of the people. He has refused for a long time, after such disillusions, to cause others to be elected, whereby the legislative powers, incapable of annihilation, have returned to the people at large for their exercise, the state remaining in the meantime exposed to all the dangers of invasion from without and convulsions within. He has endeavoured to prevent the population of these states, for that purpose obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migrations hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of lands. He has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers. He has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount and payment of their salaries. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. He has kept among us, in times of peace, standing armies without the consent of our legislatures. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation. For quartering large bodies of armed troops among us, for protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states, for cutting off our trade with all parts of the world, for imposing taxes on us without our consent, for depriving us in many cases of the benefit of trial by jury, for transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offences, for abolishing the free system of English laws in a neighbouring province, establishing therein an arbitrary government, and enlarging its boundaries so as to render it at once an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule into these colonies, for taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws and altering fundamentally the forms of our governments, for suspending our own legislatures and declaring themselves invested with power to legislate for us in all cases whatsoever. He has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. He is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny, already begun with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages, and totally unworthy the head of a civilized nation. He has constrained our fellow citizens taken captive on the high seas to bear arms against their country, to become the executioners of their friends and brethren, or to fall themselves by their hands. He has excited domestic insurrections among us, and has endeavoured to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince, whose character is first marked by every act which may define a tyrant, is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. This is the end of part 1 of the spoken article of United States Declaration of Independence. This sound file and all text in the article are licensed under the GNU Free Documentation License available at www.gnu.org/copyleft/ftl.html.